cliffcentral.com.
Hello, you are here with Wedding Central with myself, Kylie Collins.
And myself, Ntombi Ntlafo.
And today we're talking all things to do with your psychology.
Yes, yes, couple counseling in particular. In studio, we have Sandra Brownrigg. Thank you so much. As a qualified psychologist, she's in the studio with us. Do you want to introduce yourself, Sandra?
Yes, hi. Thank you for inviting me. I think couples conversations are very important.
Stunning, stunning. So the first thing that I want to understand is maybe let's break down what psychology actually means. Because I think then maybe people just think psychology is for people that have maybe just lost their mind or had like...
got issues.
Yes, or had like a nervous breakdown or whatever the case is. What is psychology, or when would you use that particular term?
Well, you know, obviously psychology, the proper definition of it is that it's the study of the mind and how it affects behavior, the scientific study. Mm-hmm. And obviously from that perspective, it's looking at different individuals and why they do what they do.
Yeah, 100%. That makes total sense. Now, couple counseling in specific, from obviously because psychologists manage or do the whole couple counseling process, what is then couple counseling?
Couple counseling is obviously then just counseling for the couple. As much as couple counseling can be done by psychologists, there are also other areas that also offer couple counseling, like your pastors, your you know, your family centers and that sort of thing that might not necessarily be done by psychologists.
Right.
So what we've decided to talk about today, because it's premarital counseling, and I think a lot of people tend to They're like, this is weird. Should we do it? Should we not? I'm sure you are all for it. But for a couple who may not necessarily know whether to do it or not to do it, what advice can you give them when trying to make the decision to go to premarital counseling?
Look, I do think premarital counseling is important. Mm. Like with anything in life, I think there's good premarital counseling and then I think there's not.
Yes.
But I suppose that goes for anything.
Right. What is involved in premarital counseling?
Well, I suppose each person would be offering different premarital counseling depending from which sort of aspect you're coming from, whether it's religious, whether it's psychological, whether it's sort of a family-based pre-counseling. Mm. But what I believe pre-counseling should be is, yes, identifying possible issues, but more importantly, giving you tools and techniques on how to actually deal with those.
Yes. Right.
Because it's not a question of if they're going to happen.
Right.
In my view, it's a question of when.
When it happens, yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. And being able to sort of teach the couple about difference and that difference is okay, and that you don't always have to agree, but how do you work through those times when it's actually quite heated and we need to come to some understanding or some conclusion about what we're going to do?
Yeah. Would you say, you know, based on that, for me, it sounds like very much a case of, you know, preventative rather than reactive. Would you say that counseling can be either both, or would you advise that you try to do it as a preventative measure rather than, you know, a reactive measure, you know, after something has happened?
Look, I think, obviously, I believe in counseling. I think it's fantastic. I think everybody should be in therapy.
Right.
It can be preventative, and that's more your pre-counseling. Mm. You know, the idea of what are your roles, what are your expectations, what do you want from each other, you know, and I think pre-counseling, premarital counseling as well should be more about sort of who am I? And
right.
I think a lot of us that get married aren't necessarily aware of at a fundamental level of what do I want?
Mm.
What do I really want?
Yes.
You know, we sort of sit there and think about the stereotypical wife or the stereotypical husband.
Yeah.
And we're not necessarily 100% certain. So I think it's preventative in that sense.
Right.
And even my couples that come to me, I would rather they come to me at the first incident of disconnection, of misunderstanding, because it's easier to deal with that than it is with probably 40 years
later
of disconnecting.
Yes. What do you find I like that you touched on the fact that, you know, that first instance of disconnect, and then that, of course, I think you're applying to couples that have then been married and now are going through something that they need to then fix. What do you think would make me a candidate to say, you know what, actually this is maybe bigger than us and bigger than what we can talk about? Why would I say, okay, let's actually see a therapist rather than trying to manage this by ourselves?
You know, I think the best time for that to happen is when you've had an incident, whatever it can be. And it could be something trivial, which I put in inverted commas because nothing's really trivial in a relationship. But when you find that you have tried to deal with something and you've tried to communicate about it and you've tried to come up with a solution and you find that it kind of keeps happening again, to me that indicates that, you know, we don't have the skills to do this right now. I don't believe a lot of couples actually have the skills to navigate and work through difficulties that come up.
What if, you know, it's... And there's always two parties in a relationship. What if the one party is not okay with going to a counselor?
You know, that happens a lot in my practice.
And I think that's must be a huge thing for me.
It is. I often get one.
Yeah, exactly.
I often get the one person in there and they go.
Is it generally the women that are quite keen to do it and the men are against it?
You know, I'd say more often than not, it's the wife that sort of comes in, or the partner, female partner that comes in and says, you know what, we've got issues, my husband's not that keen to come. And we start working from that perspective. But there are the men that do make that first appointment and come in and sort of like, I don't know what to do anymore. Kind of help me. Obviously, couples issues to work through with the couple, with both of them, is the most efficient way to work through it. But should one partner not be there, then obviously I work with the one party. From a similar perspective that I would work with the couple to try and gain understanding, better listening, better communication. Because my belief is if you can communicate about anything, you can solve anything. If you can't and you're not being as authentic and you're sort of beating around the bush and you're not being transparent, that's when problems
happen. That's when the breakdown starts to happen. What do you find are common issues that married couples are constantly dealing with after the fact? Now they've had their wedding, everything was great, honeymoon phase is now over. What do you think then starts to become, you know, a couple of examples of issues that they constantly, that you find is a repetitive thing that comes up with newlyweds?
You know, I think it comes down to sort of core issues. There are a number of symptoms that I like to call them. It could be mother-in-law, father-in-law, who's cooking, picking up your towel. And I generally call those symptoms. I think fundamentally...
Little nitty-gritty things that irritate.
Which would fundamentally be different for any couple that comes to see me. But I think it comes down to a core button or a core issue of sort of expectations, needs, and wants. And when you feel that those things aren't being met, I sort of call it a scratch. And that's when you sit there and you think, oh, this bugs me. This bugs me. And that could be anything really. So expectations, newly married couples coming in, sort of sitting down and going, okay, well, you expect me to cook meals every single night. And actually, I don't want to, but not knowing how to communicate about that. You know, I expect the man to be this way, or I expect my husband to be this way. And if you aren't able to communicate about those things, these expectations, as much as you've not communicated them, you expect them to be delivered.
And it can become like a snowball effect.
Sometimes. 100% because it's something you leave and you leave and you leave, and then one
and then it's like,
huge. It's this huge thing that happens that you that you're not aware of. Do you find, and I remember we were speaking about this off air, do you find the age now of digital and cell phones and social media is definitely an issue that couples struggle with now that maybe the older generation hasn't had to like worry about so much? Is that an issue that people genuinely, you know, feel might even break their relationship when it comes to phone or social media or anything like that?
Absolutely. You know, social media or technology as such is just another exit. So an exit in a relationship is somewhere where you exit into, whether it's psychologically or even physically, to sort of gain what you're not getting in the relationship. And it can create that space for disconnection. So you think about technology. You are always on call for work. Your emails are constantly there. Oh, let me just quickly check my mail. You know, whereas before, you know, I think you can be understanding about it, but it becomes sort of simple. It becomes the norm where, like you were saying, we would normally sit down and be communicating.
Have a nice dinner. You always check, oh, is somebody at the office needing me? Or,
or you have your phone on the actual dinner table. You know?
And there's a WhatsApp that comes through and, jeepers, I need to check it because who knows actually what's happening.
That's it.
So definitely it has the potential to create an area for disconnection. And if you aren't able to communicate about that as a couple and really express what is bugging you and why it's bugging you, and if the other person reacts quite defensively, it has that potential to create a sort of rift or a shift where a power struggle of, well, how are we going to now deal with this?
Yes, 100%. You know, back in the day, when I say back in the
back
day, like
the
older,
so old.
You know, the older generation, I'm sure, in my mind, their bigger issues were probably things like finances, and perhaps kids and maybe managing the kids, or if there is a child that maybe is a problematic child or whatever the case is, and then infidelity. Do you find that social media and digital has taken over those three kind of areas that were, you know, back in the day, that the older generations used to deal with? Do you find that that has maybe taken over, or do you think they're all kind of on par?
I think technology and social media has just been added into it. I think in the society that we are today, I think those
stressful environments,
I think they play even more a role.
Right.
Finances, two working families, children, you know, the stress behind
the infidelity. I mean, you just hear of all the stories.
I deal a lot with infidelity in relationship, and that's obviously an exit as well,
right,
where you're getting what you need outside. And there are various reasons for why infidelity
happens.
But I definitely don't think that technology has sort of overpowered that. I think maybe it facilitates some of it. But those are very much prevalent today with the couples that I do deal with.
With conflict and these issues that you've now mentioned, what are perhaps particular questions that couples need to genuinely address, or, you know, specific points that they should genuinely address before getting married? Like you're saying, like the finances and the kids, et cetera, et cetera. What are issues that they definitely need to discuss at length and perhaps even decide on before getting married that you find couples aren't talking about? Like when we mentioned premarital counseling, the certain questions that they need to ask. What are certain questions that they're not asking or that they should be asking?
You know, obviously they're the typical ones. Do you want kids? Do you not want kids? Those sort of things. But I think the more important ones as well that don't necessarily get discussed is sort of how important is your family to you?
Yeah.
You know, do you believe in supporting family? Do you think one day your mother can move in with us? You know, those.
Yeah, you don't think about that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, family to most people are everything.
Yes, 100%. Mm. Yeah. And I think it can really make also just the influence of family, because people don't realize that, you know, you get married to somebody and now.
Married to their family as well.
Entire family. And now you have aunts and whoever else calling constantly into the relationship. Mm. And that starts to become.
And when your girlfriend and boyfriend, it just seems like the two of you, but now that you have got the ring on the finger and it's the name that's been taken, it's sure.
And we were just chatting with her. Once you put the ring on the finger, for some reason something changes. You know, there's that big joke about, you know, men say to each other, be careful, put the ring on the finger, and she becomes a completely different person. And you know, I suppose in a way it's not becoming that different person afterwards. That actually, if your mother-in-law is never going to come and live with us, it needs to be before, not after. You know, those sort of things need to be made very, very, very clear. And often, you know, it's perhaps that we don't even know that within ourselves. I don't think we lie. I don't think we put on a mask. I really don't think that we present ourselves to our partner in this bizarre light just to hook them and catch them and get them down the aisle. I think it's often or not that we actually haven't thought about it ourselves.
Yes.
And, you know, it's almost that old adage of, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it is. I remember having a conversation with my husband about children before, and he was like, no, don't worry, I'll wake up with the kids and, you know, all of that sort of thing.
And then the reality happens. And then there are,
so I think there are a lot of conversations that can be had in theory. And I think in practice, when it finally comes up, that's where communication is key. Because as much as we've had the theory conversation before, it's how do we have that conversation again now that we're actually crossing that bridge? And actually, I'm a little bit peeved off that it's not going to how we said it would.
For somebody who's listening in, and, you know, that communication thing is so very, very important. It really is the crux of, like, how any relationship should work. What are different, perhaps, tips or techniques that one can use to communicate better with their other half, whether it's your partner, your husband, or whatever the case is? Let's first start with perhaps scaling down a situation, because I always find that with most relationships, we wait until something happens before you have to address something, instead of trying to have the conversation. And I think it's human. Like, you can't really preempt everything. And sometimes something just happens and you're like, oh, well, to avoid this, let's talk about it again. So what are ways to kind of descale a situation, or have a conversation after something has happened, you know, when emotions are high and whatnot?
Sure. You know, I think, as I said before, couples communicate very differently. Males and females communicate very differently. And I think it's finding a common way to communicate. Okay. I always put it in sort of two different teams. You're the purple team, I'm the green team, and we're going to now develop a pink way to communicate. And the way that I work with my couples is from an imago perspective. Okay. So imago relationship therapy fundamentally deals with communication on how to teach people to communicate through difficult times so that you're able to be honest and authentic and transparent and that your partner is able to listen without being defensive.
Yeah.
Because
this is the issue, yeah. Mm. Like something happens and now you're just like, no, but actually I didn't do it or whatever the case is, that whole defensive barrier.
Yeah. And I think the important thing is delivery. How do we deliver information? We often deliver information with you words. Mm. You know, you mean, you nasty, you horrible, you lazy.
You didn't listen, you didn't do that.
Absolutely. And, when I hear someone saying you to me all the time, I get the hair up on my back and I don't like being criticized that much.
Yes.
So the first tip is sort of that we change how we communicate from a more I perspective.
Okay.
It's I feel, I want, I need, because in that sense we own it.
Mm.
We own that this is just my perception that you're lazy.
Yes.
I'm not saying you are. I perceive you to be that way, and it really bugs me.
Yeah.
But we open up to our partner in a sense of that we're not telling them who they are.
Yes.
Because often they're not aware of the fact that this is how it's been perceived, because we then don't communicate about partner being lazy.
Yeah.
They're completely unaware. I mean, this is just who they've been for the last X years.
Yes.
And for them, they're not lazy. They're just chilling out because it's been a really long day.
Yes,
yeah.
100%.
So that's the first tip, is how we deliver.
Okay.
We deliver it in a way that is non-judgmental, non-critical, sort of non-attacking.
Mm.
But in the same breath, you could do that really, really well, and it could still be received in a way that isn't. And often in communication, we forget about that.
Yes.
Mm. We forget about the person who's receiving the information. And that's why imago therapy teaches individuals how to take ownership of themselves.
Okay.
I need to own what I'm hearing.
Okay.
Am I being reactive? Am I being defensive? Am I actually hearing what's being said? Because more often than not, we're not.
Yes, people hear the first line.
And that's it.
Yeah, and they shut down. And
we call it a soundbite.
Okay.
You know, I hear somebody say, those pants look tight on you. Boom.
That's my ass is big and my doesn't look nice.
Absolutely. And we generally react on the soundbite rather than actually listening to the whole story.
Right. Yes.
And that's what imago does. It creates an environment where there's a very structured process on how you communicate with your partner. In a way, you give information. You give all your information. You give it in that way that was discussed, so that when it's delivered, your partner gets everything.
Right.
And during that process, it then swaps, and you know, your partner is able to also give their view, because every individual has their own perspective about what is going on.
Mm.
So it's not just giving information. Yes. It's how we receive
it. How we receive the information.
And there we need mindfulness, because we're often not aware of actually how we're listening.
Mm. Yeah.
An active listening process.
Yes.
I don't believe people know how to do it.
Yeah. We hear you, but we're not listening.
We're not actually listening it. Yeah.
Well, like that thing that on Facebook says, you know, we listen to respond.
Yes.
We don't really listen to take in and to hear what has been said and then to process that. And to manage our own emotions as well, because when people speak, emotions build
already
up.
Yes.
And when we react just from emotion, well, we sort of circumvent that whole thinking part of our brain, which is quite vital.
Yeah.
And we just then react, whether it's behaviorally or whatever way it might be, shutting down, it then impacts the relationship going further.
Mm. It's crazy. And then what are ways that one can speak about perhaps difficult issues? I find that a lot of times, you know, I speak to my friends, my colleagues, everyone, people obviously have certain issues that they don't want to address with their partners.
Mm.
You know, whether it's sex, whether it's finance, whether it's, you know, the mom-in-law, whatever the case is, there's some issues that people just try and, you know,
stay away from.
Yeah, you know, they just try and like skirt around the issue. And it's not an issue that you necessarily can react to, because nothing will necessarily happen. But how would you suggest people have the tools to perhaps speak about an issue that both parties already going in are hunched up and nervous or anxious about?
The same way, from a way where you don't just speak from emotion.
Mm.
You know, I believe certain therapies fail because they try and change an emotion.
Mm.
Yes.
If something frustrates me, it frustrates me. Don't tell me not to be frustrated. What I can manage is how I behave.
Okay.
And that's where that individual self-control comes in. I can be sitting here listening to you and thinking, you are speaking the biggest load of rubbish. Like, this is all lies and filth.
Right.
But I can choose still to listen.
Mm.
I can choose still to engage differently, and I can choose a different behavior. Whereas in highly emotive times, like those topics, because they're very hot topics, family, finances, and sex. You know, they're the three topics that I bring up with my clients because they've never spoken about it.
Right.
Those are the ones where you actually need more self-control because you're going to push my buttons.
Yes.
I'm going to get upset.
Yes.
I'm going to think
it's
you're
too
an
close.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But how do I behave? And that's the one thing that we have fundamental control over is our own behavior. Not our partners, but our own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's so there's so many questions you want to ask, and you're like, should I ask this coming out personally, or you know, I'm sure, like, I mean, men and women are so different, and I mean, the whole issue of finance, but sex is a big thing, whereas women have got more, they don't necessarily need the physical sex, you know, it's more the emotion that comes with it. I don't know how to ask you.
go for it. No judgment.
But how would you communicate that to your partner that you're not necessarily wanting sex all the time? You want the romance and the emotion about it. And I think a lot of women tend to struggle with that. And going into a marriage, I think it's very important for men to understand that as well.
And the problem is, before we get married, we're in that wonderful
flash.
I'm
like starting to
blush. Sorry. I'm the one who usually brings up this conversation. You know, I think it's, you know, when you're getting married, you're coming out of that wonderful time in the relationship where you probably are all having the greatest amount of sex.
And it's amazing.
Know, the best. Absolutely. Benchmark.
Yeah. The best, and everything's great. And unfortunately, children, as much as they are the most amazing
they are the biggest
people,
sex killers.
They are. You know, it kind of takes everything and just changes everything around. And that's when communication is of utmost importance. And, you know, I think we start disconnecting from our partner from a good intentional place.
Yes.
You know, we'll sort of have sex that night when we don't really want it, and then we'll feel really crummy afterwards, and then we'll actually kind of resent you for that because, well, you should know that I don't really want to have it. And, you know, now, you know, the next time I bring it up, but, you know, we had it the other – this is where, because we have all these conversations going on in our head and these expectations, my answer to you would be just have the discussion. Just put it on the table.
Yes, yes.
Whatever it might be, whether you don't like how it's happening, whether you don't like where it's happening, whether you don't like the frequency about what it is, it's actually just being able to sit down and say, you know what, here's me, raw on the table. And that's where safety in a relationship comes from. And it's not necessarily safety, physical safety.
Yes.
It's safety that, you know what, I can safe say space. Something and you're not going to sit there and laugh at me.
Yeah, or shout at me.
You know,
or
you know,
just
upset.
Like,
yeah.
Okay,
and
well.
And that safety is what, in my sessions where Imago, we try and start that. We try and develop that space of you can speak. And I will understand it, not agree with it, and I will try and get it, and I won't sit there and be looking at you where you feel stupid or whatever the case may be. That's ultimately what we want in a relationship. Because in that safe space, you can literally sit down and talk about anything. Because often it's about what I want, what I don't want, how I want it. And it's important conversations to have.
When your couples come in with an issue, maybe they have a specific issue that they need to do, maybe a trauma or something like that, and now they need to go through it together. How long can one expect a counseling journey to be? Because I also find, again, because women have one expectation and men have a different expectation, men think 2-3 sessions we're done. How long can one expect a journey of counseling to be?
Sure. And, you know, it's like, how long is a piece of string?
Yeah. Yes.
It's quite difficult. The way that I work, and from the perspective that I work, because I'm teaching you, sort of giving you tools, and I'm teaching you a way of communicating, it's like with anything. If you're just going to come to therapy with me once a week and not do anything in the other 6 days, you're going to be with me forever.
Yeah.
That's why I'm I keep telling my clients, you know, I love you guys, but I don't want you here forever. I actually got to get out.
Move on.
Exactly. So because you've been taught tools, and that's why I think tools in whichever modality you're coming from, where they actually give you something to take home where you can stop and go, hang on, let's do this.
Let's try it.
Let's put this into place because it has worked. I like to think sort of 6 to 8 sessions.
Okay.
But that depends on the motivation of the clients as well.
Yeah.
You know, I have some clients that walk in there and after 3 sessions, they are doing
good
it at home every single day and they're working at it and they're so motivated. And for whatever reason that might be, whether they've come to me right in the beginning, so things haven't necessarily unhinged that much, or whether it has, but they are just really motivated and getting it back to where they were. it's quite difficult. You know, I've had some couples that I've worked with for 6 months, and it's not that they haven't been motivated. It's just we've had some core issues that we've had to communicate to really get through and to better understand. But I think if you're working at it and if you're really working at your relationship hard, because good relationships take work. They don't just
That's it.
You know, we kind of assume they will. And they
don't. That's not it,
You need to be conscious. You need to be aware. You need to be mindful of what am I feeling? What am I thinking? What impact is my behavior possibly having on the relationship? It's a lot of hard work,
it
especially
is.
Where we
and
all
constant hard work. It doesn't stop. You can't take a day off.
No, and you know what? If you're working together, that's the great thing, because I sort of like a tandem bicycle.
That's
you know,
it.
Sometimes your legs get tired, and I actually just want to put them up. You know?
What a great example.
That is
so
cool.
Yeah.
You know, you can sort of pedal for a while, but at some point it might come around that I have to pedal. And it's trusting and understanding your partner and being able to say, okay, enough, feet up now, I'm tired. And where it's done in that way again, where it's not seen as a criticism, but, oh, sorry, okay, let's work at this.
Yes. 100%.
And it will be. You'll hit speed bumps. You'll get flat tires. The chain will come off. At times, you'll want to jump off the bicycle and say, you know what, I'm done.
You
cycle.
Go,
I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
It's not easy. But if you're constantly working together and you have a goal, it doesn't have to necessarily be the same goal. Like I always say, there are many ways to get to Cape Town.
That's it.
But you're still getting there. And as long as you understand each other and as long as you communicate with each other, as long as your ultimate goal is connection and being together and understanding, well,
rise
take
above
different
it.
Paths.
Do you ever find that you're in a situation where you'd have to say to a client, this is not going to work? Do you know what I mean? Like,
this is
there is. Maybe before, maybe after, whatever the case is, but do you ever have a point where you have to have that conversation with your client where you have to say to them, maybe they need to consider that this is not working? Like, we've tried everything and there just isn't any progression. Or maybe a better question I should ask is, are you in the position to make that? I don't want to say call or recommendation, but do you ever find that you're in a situation where perhaps there isn't a way forward for a particular couple or whatever the case is?
Do you know what? I think sitting in session, I probably have that in the back of my head of sort of like, oh, if this carries on the way that it is, it ain't going to work. You know, I always like to believe that.
But who are you to?
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, for me, any couple that chooses to be different and work at it has the potential. But I do believe certain relationships are too far gone. But I think only you can decide when that is for you. Because you need to know, how much more effort can I put in? Am I actually capable of putting in more effort? And more importantly, do I actually want to? Because I think I see a lot of couples that come to me where the way they speak, the way they communicate, I almost feel that they've exited completely. And we do communicate. And the kind of things that I will then say is, you know, I don't see much movement in this relationship. I feel like we're stuck and I don't know why we're stuck. And I'll probably comment on the process that is currently happening between the two of them. And it'll be more like, you know, I get that you feel you're working hard and you're doing a lot of date nights and this and that and everything. And you feel like you're not getting back anything from your partner. Why is that so-and-so? And then I'll sort of go into a discussion with them to try and maybe get some understanding of what's going on and why is there this perception? Or is he trying really hard and the other partner just isn't seeing it? But I don't think
it's receiving it.
Exactly.
And if you're in the beginning stages that you haven't even got married yet and you decide to do the premarital counseling, it must be quite difficult for you as well when you can see there's going to be like there's tension already there and haven't even or they still in the planning processes of getting married.
And
that must be a challenge.
I've had a few of those that have sort of come to me and I'm thinking, sure.
I mean, I've had a client that 2 weeks prior to her wedding, she was like, you know what?
Actually,
I'm done. And, you know, she loved him, but it wasn't, she wasn't in love with him. You know, it was, sure. And I kind of said, you know, here's your money. Don't worry about it. I ended up doing her real wedding. She found somebody else. But it is, you know, so many people just go through with it because it's the whole planning process and, you know, we must do this. And
I think people go through with it
and then afterwards deal with it.
Money and what the hell are we doing? And maybe things will get better. You know, we sort of have this assumption that when we're married, it'll be fine. And actually it's been shown that after marriage, there's more requirements. There's actually, there's that something that was on Facebook that says marriage is like an empty box. And we assume it's full. You actually need to fill the marriage box every single day rather than assume it's full.
And we're in this constant cycle. I mean, the minute the wedding happens, it's where the photos, then when's the baby. And people are just constantly going at what everybody else is expecting from them. And then when that's finished, what happens.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Sort of, it's the big letdown. You know, you get that sort of post-wedding depression. Yes. Of like,
people think it's like a movie gone. That it's going to be that high, and you know, the entire time. And
but
I
remember,
say,
the movie has an ending.
Yes, yes, there are credits at some point, and you know,
we also
people
have to go to work, and then we've got accounts to pay, and then you know, we've got bills to pay, and then life sets in again.
100%.
And I think it's important to plan for that sort of life afterwards.
Yeah. 100%. So is that what you would do in your premarital counselling? You would start to gear a couple up for that life after the exciting part.
It is, you know, and I think it's often quite sad because you've got these individuals coming to you that are so happy about their marriage and their wedding, and here you go, well, what things bug you now?
Yes.
And it's like, you know what, let's just not look at the fun stuff. Like, and it's quite... It's horrible to do because you are in such an amazing
space.
But
you have to.
Yeah.
But you have to.
You have to address
those
things.
What bugs you now? What things do you think could possibly come up? And, you know, if clients come to me that are fighting like cat and dog and even in my office sort of screaming at each other, you know, one guarantee I can give them, and I don't ever give guarantees, is that, A, the marriage isn't going to fix that.
Yes.
And, B, if you carry on like this, you're going to have a very miserable life together. And, you know, I think when life kicks in as well, you know, you've got to get back to life. You've got to get back to everything.
Yeah, it's not going to be under suspended happiness for
forever.
All time.
Yeah.
Do you find that, you know, just in your personal opinion, religious premarital counseling versus non-religious premarital counseling, do you find that people may struggle or have even more different views that may make their life, their married life, more difficult if they go the religious route? And the reason why I ask that is that I find with any religion, not, you know, anything in particular, with any religion, they have certain, what would you call it, guidelines or rules
of
how you should be running your marriage, or how you should be as a husband, how you should be as a wife, or whatever the case is. And do you find that that perhaps doesn't, I don't know, does it fuel issues that may happen afterwards? Or do you think it's still a, you know what I mean, just in your personal opinion, the religious route versus non-religious route for premarital counseling?
You know, when I did my Margot training, actually, I think I was the only psychologist, and everyone else there were ministers and pastors. So, you know, there are individuals that are learning to take a religious perspective, but also teach really good mechanisms and tools in how to deal with it in a relationship. With regards to sort of religious or any other form of premarital counseling, I think it should primarily come down to the couple. Do you know, I think if you're going with your partner and they're sort of agnostic or atheist or whatever the case may be, and they've been dragged to this, you know, religious counseling.
I just think, like, especially in the Catholic faith, you're not supposed to use condoms. But I mean, we can't all have 10 kids anymore.
And contraceptives.
You know? But it's just not realistic anymore. Yeah.
You know, so, I think it's up to the couple. I think and that's where the first honest, probably, conversation needs to come out. I love you, darling, but I really don't want to use the church. I love you, darling, the church is really important to me. Can we do it?
Yeah.
You know, as I said, everybody,
you don't want to force anyone.
No. And I think it's even with therapy. You know, when my clients come to me as well, I'm like, if you don't like me, it's cool. I'm really all right with that. I'm not everyone's cup of tea. And I think the same goes for premarital counseling. I have clients that sometimes come to me and go, oh, you know, we sat through premarital counseling, it was such a waste. Or I didn't really learn anything. You know, it's almost like that prenatal counseling. They teach you nothing there.
That you can
when
actually
that baby
use.
Comes out, you're just like, what the hell? No, I didn't learn anything.
And I think sometimes people feel the same way about premarital counseling.
Yeah, like, I can actually vouch for that. Like.
Exactly. And I think if you find that your premarital counseling, you've walked out of there and gone, haven't really, you know, taken anything
from it. Yeah.
Find something else. Explore. You know, the internet is a great place. It's a terrible place as well. But you can find some really good stuff out there on how do we connect? How do we grow better? You know, what are the kind of things that we need to do as a married couple? You know, read the 5 languages of love. Read Better Marriage. I don't know. Sit opposite each other and read the book and communicate about it.
Turn off your cell phones and your Facebook and all of that.
Exactly. Actually engage
with your partner. You speak to, and I'm sure you've spoken to a number of your friends, and I mean, we've started to do it, that we actually have a technology-free space and time, that no iPads, no anything in the bedroom or anything like that. And I think that's a big problem where people are facing that day in and day out.
Yeah, I was saying to Sandra off air that we have a day a week where we actually take off. You deposit your phones and we charge them overnight, and literally we have dinner together and we prep. And
it's a Friday night, eh?
No, it's Tuesdays.
Is it Tuesdays?
Yeah. Fridays are hectic.
I thought you did Friday night.
No, No. Fridays are hectic because, you know, friends and whatnot, like weddings and prep and that kind of thing. So, but we found that, like, a lot of those conversations are much heartier and much deeper. You know, you start to realize that, you know, on every other day, you actually speak about very superficial things. Yeah. You don't actually speak about anything that's got, like, content or whatever the case is.
But I think we all do that. You know, you get back from work and a very busy day. The last thing you actually feel like doing is necessarily sitting down and going, how was your day? No, just give me the easy answer. It was good.
Yeah, like, that's,
you know,
it.
Let's leave it at that. And it is. I think we get caught up in life. I always say to my couples, if I could take you away and don't worry, your bond will be paid. I could get your relationship fixed back within half a second. Yeah. Really. Well, not I, they.
Yes.
Because we take away all the stress and we can actually focus on what needs to be focused on. But that's not life.
Yeah.
We have to be able to fix it life.
While life is happening.
I mean, I saw it with my mom and dad. My mom would get home, or my dad would get home, and my mom would be like, how's your day? And my dad just didn't like it. He just wanted to
give me a second.
Now I just do the same with Jacques, and he's like, are you going to ask me how my day was? I'm like, yes, how's your day? And like, are you ready to talk?
And yeah, because sometimes you do just need a transition period, you know, just to switch into, you know, take off the work hat and put on the, you know, wife or the husband hat or whatever the case is.
But I think as well, we're two earning families in general. So you've got two people that need to de-stress at different ways and different times, because I might want to de-stress that I talk to you, but you need to de-stress that you're actually not being spoken to. And that can also sort of create that
issues,
environment.
Yeah.
You know, different sort of life events as well, different things, you know, going to bed early, going to bed later. All those sort of things come into play in a relationship.
I think the main thing is, like, you need to speak. You need to have those conversations, no matter how awkward, no matter how tense it may be. Anybody who's listening, who's perhaps getting married, or maybe, you know, they are married and struggling, or they have a particular issue, what would your one kind of vital piece of info, like tip, or what could they do to help themselves?
If you're struggling and you really can't do it yourself, there's nothing wrong with seeking out somebody who can actually just help you. It doesn't have to be a therapist. It doesn't have to be a counselor. If you've got a friend who's unbiased, if you've got a friend who's able to give you that external approach, whatever it might be, someone that can just make you think differently, someone that can make you process differently, get help.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it's going to get worse.
To your detriment,
absolutely. There is never, it's never too late to say, you know what, I need help.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just can't do it. There's so much emotion involved. There's so much happening that you just need someone to go, hang on, stop.
Wait.
Just stop. Mm. Often my clients come to me and go, why when you say it, do they listen?
It makes sense. Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, well, because I'm not going home with you.
Yes.
That's
why.
Yeah. So I think that's it. You know, if you feel that you need help, go for it. Go for it individually. Go for it as a couple. If you want your relationship to work, I think we all need help sometimes.
100%. And just on that, do you find that a lot of people struggle with perhaps feeling embarrassed about going for, you know, counseling, or ashamed, or like, you know, the sense of maybe failure and, oh my gosh, I can't do it.
I think there's
it.
A bit, there's quite a stigma against
There's a huge stigma.
Men, I find in particular, may not like that.
No. Yeah, they're like, oh my word, why would I have to
I'm
go?
Stronger than that, you know.
And our house is fine.
Absolutely. And yet, you know, surprisingly enough, once I get a couple in therapy, the men are the ones who love talking. They really do. You know, once they kind of get
that
space.
So once you've just done that.
Absolutely. They just yak and yak, which is great. So as much as there is that stigma.
Yeah.
I think often it's been given the space
to actually be in the safe zone. Yeah.
That it changes. Safe space. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, with the thing, and I don't know, I feel like older people always say, you know, keep your problems to yourself.
Yes.
And you've just, you know, people always say that you don't tell everyone what's happening in your house or whatever the case is. And you've just said, try and find somebody who's unbiased or whatever the case is. Do you find that sometimes people make the wrong choice in terms of who they tell? My main example is I find that a lot of my friends tell their parents or their mothers, you know, and they oh my God, we're struggling with this issue. Mm-hmm. And that in itself then becomes a bigger issue. Yeah, that, you know, absolutely. Why would you tell your mom something like that?
You know, and I think that's very true. Mm. You know, I think your family is your biggest support.
They're your biggest enemies as
well. They're meant to have your back.
Yeah.
You know, they're meant to say you're wonderful and your partner isn't.
Yeah.
And I often think that it sometimes creates more issues when, say, for example, you and your partner work things out, But you know what? They don't actually have to like him or her again.
Yeah.
And then we create a different dynamic.
They haven't gone through that process with you. Yes. So they've still
done
got
is
that
seen you
animosity.
Crying, seen you angry, yeah.
They see like the worst case.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the image that they're left with. So unless you have individuals, and that's why I say someone that's impartial, that understands both of you, that can literally sit there and go, well, you know what? You're actually not so cool either.
Yeah.
You know, you also facilitated the breakdown of this.
Yes.
You know, I think that kind of person, and that's generally what your therapist would be.
Yeah.
Is be able to show both sides, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're not one-sided, are
they? Yes, obviously. Okay, cool. No, that's brilliant. Sandra, I can't thank you enough for coming through. I think anybody who's listening...
How would they be able to get hold of you if they wanted to come and see you?
Sure. I'm at the Sandton Psychology and Wellness Center in Bryanston. They can just go onto our website and look for me there, and that's where I am should anybody need help.
Fabulous. All so the best. Nice. Yeah. It's always... Eye-opening, and I think even as hosts, sometimes we struggle with, you know, how much information we give, because, you know, your friends and your husband and your family's listening, and everyone thinks, oh my God, are you okay?
Yeah, after the show,
you know? You know, are you guys going through anything? It's just like chill. It's just a matter of, you know, what I do.
Sure.
But thank you so much for joining us, and anybody who's listening, please keep up with the conversation. #WeddingCentral. CliffCentral.com.